A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Roker Report Exiles podcast in association with Vaux Brewery. And on this week's group therapy session, we have Martin Wanless, who's in Armidale in New South Wales in Australia. You all right there, Martin?
Champion, thank you. Hi, how are you?
I've been better, but you know, it's just football, isn't it? We've got Gary Winter in London. You all right there, Gary?
Yeah, good, Rich.
And we've got Niall Bromley, usually in Nice in the south of France, but at this time of year in Blythe in Northumberland. You're right there, Niall.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm all right, aye.
Have you recovered from last night? Because you were at the match, weren't you, mate?
My toes have recovered. I thought they were going to drop off at some point, like, but no, they're really getting a lot better. But mentally, no. But yeah, I'm sure we'll get into that a lot more later.
Well, why don't we start there now? To be frank, why don't we get it out of the way, lads? Because last night's dire defeat to Burton Albion, 2-1, no shots in the last 20 minutes. Will Grigg hasn't had a shot on target in 2 games. Was it as bad as it sounded? I mean, I was listening to the BBC Newcastle commentary. It didn't sound great, but they haven't sounded great for a fair while. So, what was it like being there?
To be honest with you, we actually started a lot better than what we did at the weekend against Coventry. And it was a bit strange, but the fans, I'd say, were a lot more positive yesterday as well. But I actually did some singing, Rich, which I haven't done in a long time. I can't remember last day. Well, Wickham away, when we went on what Rocky Races away trip. But apart from that, the atmosphere seemed a little bit better. I think the fans just really want this team to do well and want the club to do well. And I think everybody's, we're fed up of where we are, and you know the atmosphere was much better. But yeah, we started well. I think the players did respond to that well. But then, to be honest, probably the worst thing that could happen was yesterday was getting that penalty, because as soon as we scored, we fell asleep. As soon as we scored, they always say you're most vulnerable, don't they, when you score, and that was blatant. That was us last night. I think the players were still, you know, calming down from the penalty, and they've gone up the other end. They've scored a soft goal. Conor McLaughlin, he wasn't great last night. Conor McLaughlin, I think he, you know, we need to find a way of replacing him personally. He was shocking, really bad. And to be honest, I don't think he's had a good game at all since coming to the club. So his fault, and they've getting back in the game. And then after that, we had a spell. Sort of early second half where we're, I think, first 15 minutes, and again, Franz won full voice. But other than that, as soon as they scored, that was it. We had nothing left in us.
I thought it was absolutely pathetic, to be perfectly honest. You're coming off the back of that Coventry game, which was almost as bad. You know, the only thing I choose to do was make Saturday's performance look a little bit better. I think the team selection at the start, to me, after Kim Bjork scores that goal on Saturday, you throw him in, and you get the, you know, everybody up front, you get his energy up front, you get him closing down, and I just think you really missed a trick with that team selection to start with. And I admit it comes to it's a bad state of affairs when we're pinning our hopes on Kim Bjork, his energy.
Can I just weigh in for 1 second, Martin? Sorry, but with Kim Bjork, I agree in a sense that he probably, he should have been given a chance a lot earlier than what he did, but I've watched a lot of under-23s football this season, and I know a lot of other people that have as well, and it doesn't produce the goods for them. And, you know, or very rarely does. So I think putting him straight in a must-win game like last night was, I agree that I think Will Grigg had to start. I get what you're saying, though. And I kind of agreed to an extent that we probably should have given him a chance, but I have seen him for the under-23s, and I do think that lad, I think he's a good player. I think we've got a player there, but I think he needs a little bit more. He needs a couple more years and a loan.
I'm not saying for any stretch of the imagination he should be our first choice striker week in, week out for the rest of the season. I just think the running he showed and the closing down he showed in the last 10 minutes against Coventry is exactly what we need up front. We need that energy up front, and putting him there with the role that 09 was in last night, I just think Grigg's shot. Grigg is shot to bits, and he will never come good for us, as far as I'm concerned. And I think we just need to look elsewhere. We need to stop pinning our hopes on him.
I was going to say, just the Benji stuff, just this is what it's come to, I think, for me, just clutching at straws. Just, I think, yeah, you ran around a bit. He seems to have a bit of energy, but I wouldn't have been against him starting. I just think the goal he scored on Saturday, I mean, as great as it was and that late on, it's just, there's nothing spectacular. There's no great movement. There's nothing special about it. I mean, I could have scored that. I don't understand why that ball never falls like that for Grigg, because as I say, it's not like he made a run. Grigg's pretty static as well, and it's just fallen to him from about 5 yards out, right place, right time. But I don't know. I think, as I said, clutching at straws for me, just getting on the Benji bandwagon.
This season now has just come to clutching at straws with Gary, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, to be honest. But for me, it's the same old things. That are just, even under Ross, probably even going back further, just it's the same fundamental things that I think need addressing with this side. And I think it's just like possession. I won't really comment, because I think we still have a problem stringing passes together and a bit clueless what to do with the ball. But then you've got two other factors. You've got attacking transition and defensive transition, and I think just both of them, we're just so slow at just putting either in effect. When we're attacking, we seem to have this thing where we just wait for the opposition to get back into position, take their shape again, and we seem to have a lot of the ball in front of their back four, for example. I just think back to the Peterborough game where they absolutely destroyed us. I was at that one, and the difference was amazing. Just the front three for them, every time they broke on us, they were moving the ball through the line so quickly. All our players were all over the place, and it's so much easier to play through a team when they're shot than when they're all over the place. And as I say, we're just a lot slower. We get the ball a bit sideways, everyone takes their shape, and it's really hard to break through. And I just think with clean sheets as well, on the opposite side, with defensive transitions, we're just so reactive. We just don't seem to spot that potential of losing the football. And then off they go and attack, and it's just, we concede terrible goals. Again, just, we just don't anticipate that someone might lose the ball and kind of err on the side of caution and take up a position that might help us in that respect. But I say, this is an age-old thing.
It is, but, you know, the team's reactive, and that's because over the past, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons, the club as a whole has been reactive. And I think we really need to look at the club as a whole in terms of how the football structure is set up, because that's what's resulting in what we're seeing on the field. And it's got no structure. It hasn't had any plan or any structure for years now, going back to when Ellis Short was here with his, you know, multitude of directors of football.
Well, I was talking to a Swansea City fan today, and Swansea City, you know, they've been up and down, and you know, they're not doing particularly great in the Championship at the moment, but they've, over a long period of time, had a consistency in kind of how they play, in their style of play. They've gone through managers, and they've you know, not happily let managers move on and up to bigger things, and Gary Potter, etc. But this, they've always played with a particular philosophy over the last 15 years, going back, you know, yeah, all the way to Martinez and beyond, really. And that is lacking at our club. And how are we going to rectify it? I mean, where do we go from here in terms of the...
But that's not that easy, Rich, as in that's like the ideal, if you can get a side, ideally, that you've got such a philosophy and culture in place that players just seem to come and go, seamlessly slot in the replacements, same with managers. And Swansea went through that time where they just seemed to, whether it's Paulo Sousa, any of those guys, they were just coming in and out, Brendan Rodgers, and nothing seemed to really change. Everything sat together, whereas we've got the opposite, that whoever comes in, manager or player, it just doesn't make a difference. We've just got the same problem. It doesn't matter who's on the pitch, who's in the dugout, the same problems are still ongoing and we just can't get out of it.
I do think there's a chance we're letting some of the players off the hook, though, by looking at, you know, looking too deep into structure and looking back through the history. Is for me, over the last few games, there have been players who haven't stood up and shown their experience and their quality. You know, we all know who we're talking about. You know, the more experienced, the big names, the supposedly best players in the league, who are just not turn up. And I was thinking about this last night. We've played some of our best football when, say, someone like Aidan McGeady and even Chris Maguire haven't been on the pitch this season. I don't know what you think about that.
No, we haven't. If there was one simple answer to Sunderland AFC problems, then it would be easily rectified, wouldn't it? So I think you look at the performance on the field, and some individuals have been diabolical this season, and the attitude absolutely stinks. And we absolutely shouldn't overlook that at all, because, you know, you look at like the likes of McGeady, the likes of Maguire. It seems to me that they don't want to be playing for Parkinson, whatever they might say publicly or not say publicly. You looked at McGeady, you know, when you look back at the Netflix documentary and McGeady's comments about Chris Coleman while Coleman was still in the job. You can kind of see what a divisive character he might be behind the scenes if things aren't going his way. And I think we've potentially underestimated the amount of work Jack Ross was doing behind the scenes pulling that group of players together.
Well, the thing is, I totally agree with what you're saying. And I think the hardest part about that, and it goes back to what you were saying about Swansea before as well, Rich, is the fact that all these players that have all come from different places, because of the massive, massive transition the club has took in the last 3 years of dropping down two leagues from the best league in the world to where we are now, to the, you know, to Sunday league football. It's, I mean, the thing is, you've got too many players in that team, personally, who are just in different places. Aidan McGeady, he's going to, like we said there about what he said about Coleman in the documentary, I mean, this is a guy that's played Champions League, he's played in Europe, he's played in the Premier League. No player in that dressing room can probably say anything to him, because he, you know, they're like, well, that's Aidan McGeady, you know, he's been there, he's done it, he's had an excellent career. And then you've got other players like Denver Hume. I mean, let's not forget, these are all players in the exact same team, all wanting the same thing, which is to get out of this league. Well, hopefully that's what they want. And, you know, like Chris Maguire, he's not at the, you know, he's at this is the biggest club he's ever played for. I know Derby fans might have an argument against that, but he was just young then. But to be at Sunderland, he loves it because he's playing in this big stadium and he's a big game player and he likes playing at derbies and he likes doing his shithousery and the fans will love that and the fans have loved that and then you've got other players like Will Grigg who's came in as a saviour. Everyone's there for completely different reasons and they're at completely different stages and they've all come from different places. And when Rich said about Swansea, if you look at that team, other than the likes of Leon Britton who came through, the rest of them, they brought a load of young players in, you know, they nurtured them and they adapted and they all had the same philosophy and the same mentality, you know, and well, saying that, Leon Britton and Gary Monk, because I had that installed in them as well, but, you know, they all had that. We don't have it. We're a squad made up of good players, but we're not a team. And there's too many different personalities for me personally in that team. That's why I think everybody was craving, everybody was crying for the likes of Robson, Embleton, Hume, players that had to come in, manager Sorrow before they left to come in and to, you know, to have this, you know, they love the club because they're from the area or whatever. And it's just, for whatever reason, it's not happening. That's what should have happened. That is what should have happened. We should have done that, but... Like I say, nobody could have argued with the business at the start of last summer. And, I mean, this summer was a little bit different, but, you know, people were like, oh, well, we need to get these players in. no, maybe it doesn't work. And I mean, I probably rambled a bit there, but you know what I mean? People have come from too many different places for me personally, and it's not working. And there's probably a lot of personality crashes. I don't know that for a fact, but there possibly is. And it's just, it's difficult for anyone, especially someone like Parkinson, who's coming in, who, for whatever reason, it looks like isn't getting the respect of the players. And he probably never had it from the moment he walked through the door. I mean, it's just, yeah, I don't know what the answer is, but it's still in my head, isn't it?
It's a bloody mess.
I agree with that now, but it is. The personality clash isn't really an excuse, though, is it really now? Like, I mean, at the end of the day, I think Rich was right in the first place. The players shouldn't get off the hook for this. They're absolute criminals at the moment. I just think everything's pointing at the manager, but they're the common denominator here. A lot of them have been here through last season as well, and it's infuriating that they seem to be able to decide whether they want to play for a manager or not. Some Ross has gone, maybe, I don't know.
To be honest, I totally agree with what you're saying. It's not an excuse. But historically, everyone's going to laugh when I say this. But if you look at other teams, historically, who have done what we've done, which is get very good players and probably the best players to be in that league, in the team, and try and gel them, it never works at any level. I mean, remember all them years ago with Real Madrid, by the way. I'm not comparing something to Real Madrid before everyone starts tackling me. Remember when they got all the big lads in and the Galacticos is what they called them, and that never worked for years. It didn't work. There was too many big personalities. It didn't work. That team barely won anything, really, compared to what the show.
I agree with that now.
And the only reason...
I agree with that now, but... Don't you think, though, that at League One level, this is hardly... All right, Galacticos of League One, but don't you think there should be a bit more humbleness when you're in League One? Like, some of these guys, no offence to them, or maybe actually loads of offence to them, they wouldn't have this opportunity that if we're still in the Premier League. So they should be privileged to play for this club. Like, as a minimum, they should be leading the league in effort and commitment for that privilege alone. I mean, if they're always in effort, I think the results would probably fall our way more often than not. Not because they're the most talented side in the league. I don't believe that at all. But I just think they've got enough talent-wise that the rest is probably down to commitment and desire.
I think when it comes to talent, I think the best you can get out of this team when it comes to talent is finishing fifth and getting the playoff final. And, you know, because Jack Ross, everyone thought at the time, you know, it wasn't working this out like that. Maybe, just looking now, I mean, hindsight's a lovely thing, but maybe looking now, he did a fantastic job. I mean, we don't know that. I'm not saying that that's the case. But that could be the case. And Parkinson's come in, who's not as good a manager as Jack Ross, and he's feeling with them. And maybe they played out their skins and did absolutely everything they could last season, with a few tweaks in the summer this season. You know, we haven't actually brought that much in. But maybe that is as good as what this team is. Maybe it isn't actually any better than that. But then again, how can you say that when you've got the likes of Max Power, who's done it before, with Wigan, and Will Gregg, who's done it, and Aidan McGeady, who's done it at such a level, and, you know, Catamol, who was here last season, who did it in the Premier League. I don't know. I'm just going to end up contradicting myself, because I really don't know the answer. But I just feel like there's obviously something, but for me personally, it's got to be a personality thing. It's got to be. I know you're saying it shouldn't be like that, but I just don't see what else the problem could lie with it. Yeah, I honestly don't know, but I am starting to think. I think a lot of people are starting to think maybe Jack Ross did genuinely get the best out of that team.
Oh, look, I think Jack Ross got an awful lot out of that team last season. An awful lot out of it. And I think, especially if you look at that period between August when he came in, or July, June when he came in, and January, February, he got more out of that team than he potentially should have. And a lot of that was down to Madge's goals. Once we took Madger out of the team, it was evident that there was an over-reliance on his goals and his conversion rate, because it was astronomical. And Wildrake hasn't worked, full stop. We know that, and we can see that. In the summer, there was obviously all of the takeover talk, and I think, you know, it's, as I said before, there's not one answer to all of this. Since January, February, Stuart Donald and Charlie Methven have been totally preoccupied with selling the club to some extent, whether it's selling it completely or getting a major investment into it. Jack Ross had to have transfer talks with Mark Campbell in the summer to identify targets, apparently. And there was no planning, no strategy, anything in our summer transfer window. Jack Ross started, for whatever reason, this is to me where Jack Ross completely messed it up. The only four preseason games that we have, if I remember correctly, we played three at the back, which was a completely alien system to that group of players. And really, that team at the end of the season, obviously just got beaten in the last minute of the playoff final, that team needed a couple of tweaks. One, getting a really good goal scorer in, and two, getting another creative wide player, in my opinion. And that team would have been challenging for the top two places. For whatever reason, Jack Ross tried to rip it up and start again with a new formation, which he ditched after a game and a half. And he's paid the price for that. The players, for whatever reason, sort of lost their form. And now we're in a situation where rather than having a team where we need a little bit of tinkering done and fine-tuning to get up to that top two position, we've kind of ripped it up and Parkinson's just took a wrecking ball to it and tried to demolish it and build something from scratch.
Do we think that there's a proportion of the blame that needs to be laid at the feet of the people running the club, the people who are ultimately 100%. Responsible? Because, I mean, these are guys who've come in, I'm not doubting their intentions. My big question is, do they know what they're doing in running a club of this size, in terms of the size of the fan base, which, you know, is undoubted. We're still getting 20-odd thousand on a Tuesday night against Burton Albion. You know, there's no doubt in the size of the club and the responsibility that comes with that. Are these guys out of their depth? They're not making it, because to me, some of the decisions that they've made, the decision to put the pre-season on hold while one takeover didn't go ahead, a decision to trail a takeover that didn't turn into a takeover, a decision to sack Ross. You know, we were all demanding it. I'm hands up there. I'd turn by the end of it as well. Decision to bring in a manager who plays a very different style of football to what Jack Ross would want to play. And when we were playing out, Best did play last season. These decisions, the decision not to have a director of football in place yet, these decisions, they've got an answer for those.
Oh, look, first of all, I do not doubt their intentions, right? I think they're here to do a good job. I think they're here for the right reasons. I think they are playing a real-life version of Football Manager to an extent. League One, for them, in their footballing world and footballing experience previously, is like working in the Champions League. You know, the difference from Eastleigh and, you know, from Oxford, where Oxford were when they were involved, League One, the top of League One, the chance of going to the Championship is like playing in the Champions League. So they are operating at a far higher level than they've ever done before, and we are operating at a far lower level than we've ever done before. So there's a discrepancy there in terms of those two things. What they should have done in the summer, and like I think they had a really good 7 months. When they first came in, they had a really good 7 months. For the best part of a year now, they've been trying to sell the club, and they have been preoccupied with that. There's been no foundations put in place to really build something, and that was the only, I've said it before, that was the only potential positive about going down to League One, the chance to kind of start things again, put a really firm structure in place to enable us to do something like Swansea did, like Bournemouth have done, like other clubs who are overachieving and building things like Sheffield United have done. We could have done that. The concentration being there to really set up a structure for the long term, they would have made that a priority in the summer. And that chance has fallen by the wayside. So they have to be held hugely accountable for what's gone on. And as I said, I think allegations of them trying to fleece the club and just flip the club and all that sort of stuff, I think they are in it for the right reasons. However, they have made serious mistakes on the footballing side, and I think they do need questioned.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're the ones who appointed Phil Parkinson. There's a big scramble today on social media, last night on social media, and listening to some of the other radio shows and podcasts that have gone out there, Totally Football League show I was listening to before we started talking, and they were saying that Parkinson's under pressure. Have they got a decision to make there? The owners, are we in that window, that, you know, the week or so we've got before we go to Gillingham again, where Parkinson might be at risk of losing his job?
Oh, look, if I was in charge of that decision, he'd be gone. I think you've made one mistake by appointing him in the first place. A bigger mistake is not acting and getting rid of him when the signs are so clearly evident that he is not going to work here. to my mind, again, like that side needed some tinkering with. It just needed a couple of little tweaks doing to it, and a decent side to compete for the top three or four places in that league. And he has wrecked it within how many games? 10 games? 11 games? Whatever he's had.
Lost 7 out of 11.
Lost 7 out of 11. If you look at what Ross did last season, and you look at that record, it's absolutely criminal, right?
Right.
And everybody's banging on about give him a transfer window. One of the biggest premises of bringing him in, we were sold, was that he worked under a transfer embargo at Bolton and got them up working with what he'd got. And you can't go from that to saying, oh, I need a transfer window to bring in five players to play my style. That's just bullshit.
Well, Martin, I know, but come on, that's that 11-game thing. I mean, we've got to remember, man, what, five of them were cups? Five of them were cup games? I know what you're saying. The stats aren't great, but...
It's not just the stats, Niall. It's what you're seeing with your eyes, man.
Yeah, I know.
The players aren't playing with him. The results aren't there. The performances aren't there.
But he's regressing the side. This is exactly what everybody and what we were saying about Jack Ross. The players aren't playing for him. The results aren't great. You know, and now you're seeing cries for him, for, you know, people wanting him back. It's the end of the day. Yeah, he's got now a 10-day period. He's not had that since he's been at the club. You've got to remember, he's been doing Tuesday, Saturday, every week since he's came. He's had these pointless cup games. And let's be honest, none of us wanted to play in the cups. Nobody cared about the cups. If we'd beaten Oxford, it might be getting a bit exciting because then would have been the quarterfinal of the League Cup. But let's be honest, our main focus has always been and has to be the league. It's as simple as that. And yeah, we got out and knocked out the cups. Maybe we didn't, you know, get beat the way we did at down at Scunthorpe. It is embarrassing. But at the end of the day, like, and I'm not saying we should have lost those games on purpose or anything like that, but those players and, you know, everybody involved, like, everybody would have known that isn't the priority, and it's just going to those games and they're a bit of a hindrance and nobody really wants to play them. But now it's the league and now we can focus. Now we're
going to turn it on and off like that now. You can't turn it on and off like that.
Well, I'm not saying you can turn it on and off, but what I'm saying is, like, Martin, in the last game we played before this one at Gillingham last week, right, we had two players who were playing games somewhere else across the world. I mean, we had one first-team defender who could start. Like, at the end of the day, I wasn't surprised last week when we got beat off Gillingham, but then it's just like, nobody looks at the actual big picture and everyone just thinks that's another defeat. We'll just add it to the list of it now. It's now 11 defeats and whatever. And it's not the case. Like, I think you've got to give the guy a transfer window. You're saying about the transfer embargo, but he'd already been at that club before the transfer embargo. He'd already been there. So some of them players he had brought in anyway. So the thing is, I get what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying. Don't get us wrong. I'm not disagreeing to full, but I just think that, yeah, last night was disgusting. It was horrible. It was. But I think that's only his sixth league game, I think. His sixth league game. So,
and how many still he's lost? So early. I mean, he's won one out of six.
No, he's won two league out of games.
Six, sorry.
He's won two, he's drawn two, and he's lost two. No. He's won two, he's drawn one, and he's lost three. Which isn't a great return, but it's still such early days. I think he's been at the club for a month. Just over a month. I mean, I'm sorry, but for me personally, to say that he's, you know, get rid of him, he's not the man, blah, 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 and it's not true with the transfer window, I think that's harsh. And that is wrong. If they sacked him, I'd be like, right, I get it. But for me personally, I think it's harsh, and I think you need to give the guy a bit more time. He's got 10 days now. He's got 10 days, which is the longest stint he's had before a game. Let's see what he can do. And then after that, if we don't get the result at Gillingham, I mean, if we get beat or whatever, I can see the club making a change. But for me, I just think it's a little bit harsh to be saying that, you know, get rid of the guy, he's this, he's that, it's not working, blah, 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 when he's been there for, what, 5 weeks?
Oh, look, it is, but I think, again, I think a bigger mistake is not acting when it's clearly obvious that it's a wrong choice. And to my mind, and obviously some people will disagree, to my mind, it's blatant that he is the wrong person to be managing this football club. I think at this period of time, you go, okay, well, we'll have a good season now if we finish in the playoffs, right? From this point, we'll be doing pretty well if we get a playoff position. I think any half decent manager should be able to get us challenging for that playoff position.
But you've got to remember as well, Martin, he's come in and he's inherited a team, which I think, like I said before, I don't know, this is all just me guessing to an extent, but I do actually think that the likes of McGeady, the likes of Maguire, they obviously love Jack Ross. You could tell they love Jack Ross. And they're the big fishes in that dressing room. You can tell they're the big fishes. He's got all this he's got to deal with. And he got thrown in. He came in on the Thursday and he had a game on the Saturday and he only had one training session. You know what I mean? Like, he's not had any time. And now we might see, with him having longer periods of time, we'll see what happens. But I don't think him getting that job, everyone thinks, oh, he should be lucky to be in this club. He's a nobody. You know, he's at Sunderland AFC. He's at this massive club and he's a nobody. But at the end of the day, that doesn't mean that he's got an easy job. Has he? He has got the last thing that guy's got is an easy job. He's got a fucking horrible job. He's got probably the worst job in football at the minute. And we've just got to let him see what he can do. And I'll tell you one thing, his interview after the game last night, for me personally, I thought it was brilliant what he said. After the whole stadium's up, saying you're getting sacked in the morning, that must have been horrible. But, you know, he just said, you know, I totally agree with what the fans are saying. This is what we need to do. This is what we need to do. We weren't good. We weren't doing it. So he's seeing the problems. Hopefully he can rectify it. That's just what I think. I know probably in the minority, but...
Gary, have you got any perspective on Phil Parkinson and on his future? You've heard what Martin and Niall have been.
Yeah, I'm just weighing up the arguments between Martin and Niall. I can completely see both sides. I understand why he's under such pressure already, because this is an awful start. I do think some of the attacks are just getting a bit personal too soon. I just think some of the stuff about him being a serial loser, well, he's not, because CV says, like, League 2 playoff win with Bradford, League 1 playoff semi, League Cup final, FA Cup quarter final, Bradford, and then the promotion with Bolton. It's not, sometimes you just think with what you read that they've just hired someone who's just continuously got teams relegated from the lower leagues, but he's obviously achieved some success in his career and that's why he's been hired, because I do believe that some of the candidates that he was up against, there was nothing that inspiring about that list. And it's only come to fruition now because he's had a crack at the job and it's gone, quite frankly, appallingly for the first 11 games. It's easy to say, like, oh, Daniel Stendel would have been a better choice, or Ainsworth or whatever. But, I mean, you said about the owners making mistakes. It's hard to even say whether this is one of them, because it's just an awful start. But Niall's, I do agree with Niall on the 11 games, half of them being cut, because suddenly we care when we lose the matches. And I agree the manner of the defeats was terrible, because we're playing strong teams out there. But at the end of the day, the league form is awful, but the damage isn't done yet, because I think we all think, say, like a team like Peterborough, golf apart, but they're only third and, what, 5 points ahead of us, and we've got a game in hand. So the season's rescuable, but then there's a decision to be made.
So, Gary, I guess the question there is, how many more games do we give Parkinson to show that we actually are starting to head in the right direction? Because we've said, I think Niall said already, after if we get beat next game against Gillingham, then that could be curtains for him.
It could well be. I feel like every game he goes into, it could be. And this is the end of Jack Ross's reign was the same. And that's why I'm honest, I think he's gone already, Parkinson. So to that effect, maybe it's time to just chop him now. But I feel like every game that goes by, it will be one defeat away from having these calls again. I don't think he's going to get sacked right now. But again, if it's a poor defeat at Gillingham, I don't know who we've got after that, but it just mounts just every time we don't string more than a win together. I think he's just on the edge, and I think he's gone, if I'm honest.
Well, I think that's probably a good point to bring that conversation to an end. I'm going to park the question of who you might want to see in his place for another recording. Maybe we can come back to that when we've had another week to stew over
can
the...
I just, point out, Rich, I think I'm right in saying, I might be wrong, I think the game after Gillingham, we've got Blackpool at home.
Mm-hmm.
Blackpool are managed by Simon Grayson. Simon Grayson indeed got sacked from Sunderland after playing a Phil Parkinson team at the Stadium of Light.
Well, there could be a symmetry there, couldn't
there? There's some nice footballing symmetry there, if I'm not talking rubbish, which I might be, but I don't think I am.
Well, no, you're right. And you've worked that out, like, bloody hell. Aye, you're totally right. It was Bolton 3-3, and he got sacked 50 minutes after. Hats off, Morton. That was good. That I'm impressed by that.
All right. Well, we're gonna move on now. And earlier this evening, I spoke to Louise Hunter, who is also down in Australia, in Sydney, from the Sydney Sunderland Supporters Group. So here is me speaking to Louise earlier this evening. And I'm joined down the line now by Louise Hunter from Sydney in Australia. You're right there, Louise.
Yes, I'm fine, thanks, Rich. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Just we'll get out the way at the beginning, shall we? Me and you, we went to school together.
About 20
odd years ago.
Yep.
In Farringdon.
Years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Farringdon School in class of 98.
Memories.
Yeah, it's nice to speak to you. And we'll also get out the way that you're the sister of one of our regular contributors,
That's
Paul.
Right,
Hunter.
I am.
You
That's
are.
Right.
So, Louise, you're in the Sydney Sunderland Supporters. Is that the name of the group?
That is, yeah, that's the name of our group.
So you're all based around Sydney in Australia. And so how did you end up down there?
Well, I came here almost 11 years ago now. I was actually at home doing my teaching degree, doing my PGCE. And me and one of my friends who we were on placement together, we just got chatting one night and decided we didn't want to finish studying and then just work forever. So we decided we'd come out and do some traveling together, and we did. Nearly 11 years later, here I am, still teaching, but you know, somewhere with a bit more sunshine than where we met.
Yeah, because you're in summertime now, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right, just coming into summer. Yeah,
lovely. And we're just descending into the depths of winter here.
Be coming home to experience that, because I am coming home for Christmas this year for the first time in nearly 11 years. So
oh wow,
yeah, I don't get off without it this year.
Will you be getting to the Boxing Day game?
Oh, definitely. I've already got Paul on to booking the tickets. Yeah, definitely. That's one of the things high up on the priorities for when I'm home.
Yeah, it will be for me as well. I'm taking my little lad to his first Boxing Day match as well, and we're going to be in the Roker End with all the flags.
Oh, nice.
With all the flags. He's really looking forward to that. So that's always a good time for everyone to get together. All the exiles will be coming back. And
good.
Yeah, it is. And so you're in the Sydney Sunderland Supporters Group. Can you tell us a little bit of the history about the group, about the branch, and kind of what you get up to, really?
Yeah, definitely. So we actually started about 5 years ago when our founding member, Chris Green, he's an Aussie lad, born and bred, but for one reason or another, decided to be a Sunderland fan. And he was on his way over to the UK for a holiday and had a stop over in Dubai, where he came across the UAE supporters branch, headed by Stuart White, I believe, at the time. And Chris got in touch with Stuart, went along to one of their meetups and just had an amazing time with them, thought this is such a great idea, getting Sunderland fans from elsewhere together to watch the matches together. I mean, that was back when we were in the Premier League as well. So then upon his return back to Sydney, Chris decided he'd set up a Sydney Sunderland supporters group, which started with a Facebook page. And then a few people got into the group that way. I actually met Chris and became part of the group on a bit of a chance meeting one night. It was about 5 seasons ago when we played Man United on the Saturday night when we beat them 2-1. And I was actually in the Sydney casino with another couple of friends who were also Mackhams. And we just happened to see Chris and this other one guy, just the two of them alone in their Sunderland shirts, sitting at a table in the casino surrounded by all these Man U fans. So we just went over, sat with them, got chatting. And that's where we found out about the Sydney Sunderland supporters group. So then we became members. And then since then, the Facebook page has just grown. So, I mean, it's a bit more tricky now to get regular get-togethers to actually watch the game, since we got relegated to the Championship and then League One, as I'm sure you and all of your listeners know. So it's a bit harder to get together, because all of the Premier League matches in Australia you see are shown. It's even if your match isn't necessarily the featured match, you can actually push the button on the TV and you can see all of the Premier League matches, so you can watch any of them you want. But then Championship and League One, you're relying on a certain channel that might screen three or four throughout the season. So we do still get together when we can, but these days it's more we'll get together and have, you know, just social events anyway, just to catch up and stay together as mates. And we might have some weekend events in the park where people come down for picnics and barbecues. So there's still a way to keep the group together, even if it's not as much to watch the football anymore.
Oh, that sounds really good. It sounds like, you know, it's a good social life you get being a Sunderland fan. And I love the fact that you bumped into the guy. That's how it is, isn't it? I mean, everywhere you go in the world, there's a Sunderland fan. I'm sure the guy who does the mobile post office around us is a Sunderland fan as well. we get everywhere.
It tends to be like that.
It's great to hear about how the branch has been built up like that. And we've had a few stories of kind of newly established branches recently. So is it mostly people who've moved down from the northeast?
It's a real mixture. There are quite a few born and bred Mackhams, or, you know, from the surrounding areas in the northeast. But there are quite a lot of people that aren't, you know, either weren't born in England at all or weren't born in Sunderland that have a funny backstory as to why they're Sunderland fans. I'll give you one example. One of our longtime members, Ricky, he actually is a Sunderland fan because as a kid he won the league with them on Champman. So yeah, I bet he's wishing he picked a different team now to play that game with.
Yeah, I think I was always Wigan Wanderers. And when we met up there as a group of exiles, I think your Paul was there. And it was a little bit of a homecoming for me as a Champman player. But it wasn't a great result, certainly.
There are a few people that aren't from Sunderland, but yeah, like I say, that they've got one reason or another to follow them, but you know, they all stick with them, so they're welcomed in the group with open arms.
Absolutely. And you've got contacts with other groups of Sunderland fans over in Australia as well, the Melbourne Mackhams you mentioned.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, there is a group in Melbourne called the Melbourne Mackhams, and I know that our Chris, the founder of our group, he's in contact with those guys regularly. And I mean, the thing with Australia is everywhere is so far away that from Sydney to Melbourne is a plane ride. Arranging meetups between the branches is a lot harder than what it would be in England. But it is nice just to have that other group out there as a contact for events where we may be able to get together or just correspond about how badly Sunderland are doing in general.
Yeah. Have you seen an uptick in interest of the club coming from like the Netflix documentary Sunderland Till I Die? Has that had any impact? Did you get like an influx of people who were newly interested in the club? Or
since the Netflix documentary, we probably have seen a few more people come to meetups that we do have. I mean, since then, the main events that we've had have been to watch all of the Portsmouth games that seem to be televised at the back end of last season, been the league and the cup. And in general, though, just even, you know, in Sydney in your day-to-day life, if you get, you know, you strike up a conversation with somebody out and about, you tell them you're a Sunderland fan, the first thing that they'll say is, oh yeah, I've seen the Netflix documentary Sunderland Till I Die. So it seems to be that there's a lot of just sports fans in general have made sure that they watch that documentary, and yeah, they all say how good it is and how they now hope that we get promoted. And I think that's probably made people feel sorry for us, but yeah, we'll take it.
you get the sympathy vote, certainly.
Definitely.
I mean, we had an anecdote from the guy from the North American Supporters Association saying that Donald Trump's son's been watching the documentary. So have you heard that one? So it does get around.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. So have you got anything on the horizon? Have you got any meetups or any events that you want to tell us about and try and, you know, see if we can get a few more people along?
Yeah, we actually do. So this coming Sunday, which is Sunday the 1st of December, we have our annual Christmas party / end of year bash. So that's this Sunday from 11 a.m. in Sydney Park in Sydney. Anybody who might be in Sydney who wants to come along but doesn't know where that is, it's close to Alexandria train station. And everybody's welcome. Family, friends, there'll be lots of children there. Anybody who wants to come along but isn't a Sunderland fan, all's welcome. We'll just be getting together and having a bit of food, few drinks in the park, and just celebrating a year of friendship, if not the year of football.
Well, it sounds lovely, and it's on my bucket list of places to go to Australia. I've not been out there yet. A long way on the plane, as you'll know.
It is a long way, but once you do it, you realise it's not that bad, though, Rich. And if you do, then just give us a shout, and there'll be at least a few Sunderland fans will happily show you around.
Super. So, how do our New South Wales, Sydney, isn't it? Yeah. How do our fans around your area get in touch with the group?
So, well, we have a Facebook page of Sydney Sunderland supporters that is run by Chris. So far, we've got over 500 members on that page. But anytime that you want to just drop a line to Chris, you can message him directly, or just look for the regular posts that come through about when we get together or things that are going on. We also have a Sydney Sunderland supporters Instagram page that's run by myself. And anybody who wants to know anything about getting in touch with us or more about what we get up to can just drop me a line as well, and happily chat to them.
That's wonderful. Well, it's been lovely to catch up with you again, Louise. Stay in touch, and thanks for your time this evening.
Thanks for the call, Richard.
And it was lovely to hear from Louise there. She's Paul Hunter's sister, and I think has met up with you before, Martin.
She's been to my house for barbecue once. Yes.
Oh, fantastic. We all end up bumping into Sunderland fans wherever we go, don't we? So we're going to move on through the show. We're going to play our regular feature, Playing Away, devised by the one and only Martin Wanless, who's on the line here. I'll run through the rules really quickly. I think we've just about got a grasp on them. All three of us take turns to name a player in the starting 11 of a game from this week in the history of Sunderland Association Football Club. You've got two lives each, so if you get a name wrong, you lose a life. If you name a substitute, you have another go. The last player standing gets 2 points, and if more than one player is still in after the last player is named, all the remaining players get 1 point, and we'll do goal difference as well. Because if you've got one wrong, you're gonna be lower down in our little mini league we've got. So the game I have for you this evening is from 2007. The actual date of this, I should get up really, shouldn't I? It was Sunderland 1, Derby County 0. It was December the 1st, 2007. So we are in the era of Roy Keane. We were playing at the Stadium of Light in front of 42,380 people. The week before, Sunderland had been hammered 7-1 away at Everton. But both of these teams were newly promoted and both in the bottom three at the time. So I'm going to come to you first, Gary. Put you on the spot. I haven't told you what audios are coming in. So Gary,
if I was at this match, it's... Sounds familiar, although I just might have it completely wrong. I'd go Carlos Edwards.
Carlos Edwards was playing on the wing in that match. Well done.
Yes. I actually think Carlos Edwards broke his leg in that game. I think he came off with a broken leg.
He did come off on...
Yeah, you're right, Martin.
He came off on 78 minutes. I've not read the match report in enough detail to get that, but he definitely came off. So that might well be that game. Unfortunate for Carlos. So, Niall, you're next. I'm leaving Martin last. It's his game.
Well, obviously, I'm going to start at the front because I know I can get this right. So I'm going to say Kenwyn Jones started up top.
He did. He started up front in that match. Yeah. Yes, Kenwyn Jones. Quality
Sorry,
player.
Lads. That was I just did that to get myself through, like, because I'm proud of thinking. But I go in for the obvious one. I apologise.
Hey, they're all count equally. So we come to you, Martin. So
I might go at the other end of the pitch because, as you said, Rich, I think this came off the back of a really heavy defeat at Everton, and Craig Gordon had conceded a lot of goals, and I think he was replaced by Darren Ward.
Oh, I'll tell you what, Martin, that's some knowledge there. Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Darren Ward, the Welsh goalkeeper, was playing in this game. He was, wasn't he? Underrated.
Had a good throw.
Yeah, he's a good player. So we come to Gary for your second time round. So we've all got one right so far. So Gary, who are you going to go for next?
I'm going to go for Niall's good mate, Danny Collins.
Danny Collins, absolutely. The second Welshman on the pitch from my neck of the woods up here in North Wales, Danny Collins. So, Niall, have you got any more obvious ones to go with? Or?
To be honest with you, this is my era, so I should be quite good at this, to be fair. But I am. It is hurting me ahead of it because that Darren Ward one, I am so, because I couldn't decide whether Ward, because I knew Ward had come in because of that Everton game, but I didn't think it was that game. I knew it was around there, but I didn't think it was that game. So that's why I said I'll go at the top, because I wasn't sure about the keeper. So, I mean, now I am going to go with another obvious one, because I'm pretty sure he would have started. In fact, I think he did start. I've actually got a funny story to tell you about this game afterwards. I'll tell you about it afterwards. But I think Dean Whitehead played.
He was central midfield. Absolutely. Yeah, Dean Whitehead.
That's another easy one. Sorry, boys.
That's all right. So, Martin. So, we've got Collins, Edwards, Whitehead, Jones, and Ward. So, we're getting there.
I'm probably going to be the first one to get one wrong now, I reckon. I'm going to go for a player who Roy Keane seemed to like quite a lot that season, if I remember correctly, Ross Wallace.
Oh, that's one I was expecting people not to get. Yeah, Ross Wallace is in the starting 11 that game.
Excellent.
Well done. Excellent. So back to you, Gary. Choices, because we
probably had quite a few, like quite a squad then, so I'm thinking a few, but it's whether they play that particular game, but because I think Martin's throwing me now, if Everton was a game either before this or a couple of games before and they got walloped, then wholesale changes might have been made. I was going to say Dwight York.
Are you going to go with Dwight York?
I don't like that tone, Rich, but yeah, I'm going to go with Dwight York.
All right, well, that's the first one you've got wrong. He wasn't in that team. Ooh. So that's one against your name. Niall, we come to you.
All right. I'm going to... It's tough, this. I'm going to go with Miller.
You're going to go with Miller? No, you get another goal. Liam Miller, who tragically passed away last year and still felt across football, I think. He was on the bench and did actually come on in the latter stages of the game. So you get another goal.
He was on the bench. Oh, my God. All right. Who am I going to go for? All right. Was Ledbetter playing? I'm going to say Ledbetter.
Grant Ledbetter in the middle. And he was subbed off for Liam Miller on 83 minutes. Well done.
Good one.
All right.
So Martin, you're down to the bare bones here. I think we're looking for three defenders and a striker. I think we've got the midfield.
Right. Well, I'm gonna go for let's have a think. I've got a couple of defenders in mind. Danny Higginbottom.
Danny Higginbottom was absolutely there. That's a great answer. Because I think all of these defenders are quite difficult to get. So Danny Higginbottom's a great answer there, Martin. So Gary, over to you. You've got a couple of defenders and a striker.
Going to take a punt at the striker being Chopra.
Chopra was on the bench, so you get another go.
Oh, great. was it two? So the striker's still...
It's horrible getting two defenders. Go, I'd rather lose.
God, I don't want to. I'm not ready for this.
this is to keep you in the game as well. Just to put a bit more pressure on.
Oh, cheers. feel like Parky. Nosworthy?
No, Nosworthy wasn't in the side. You're out, man. Oh, that's you gone. Man.
Pointless.
You're out of it. So we move over to Niall.
Well, the thing is with this striker, because I remember who scored the winner because it was a last-minute winner, but I'm pretty sure he came off the bench. So, I mean, I can see him and I can get another bounce back. So I can see him. Is that right? So, I mean, I can see him because I
you
think
can see him
off the bench.
You're taking away my tiebreaker question, but same. giving that away now.
Okay, well, Stokes.
Stokes came off the bench and scored on 90 minutes.
So I get another goal, right? Answer. So, but we've had Chopper, we've had Jones, we've had who was what other striker? Are you sure that's another striker we're waiting for?
I'm absolutely sure it's another striker. Absolutely.
Well, the only other one then, and I wasn't sure if he ever started, but the only other one from that season, I thought he only ever came off the bench, is Andy Cole. But
what an answer! What an answer! That's the second striker.
That's not that good of an answer because he was the only other striker I think we had on the books at that time. So I kind of used the Stokes thing with that. Sorry, Rich, but
No, that's good knowledge. You knew it scored and you used it. That's playing the game. So Martin, we're down to two defenders, mate.
Two defenders. So we've already got Higginbottom and Collins, who were both left-footed defenders, weren't they? So I reckon another defender. We've had Nyren, who wasn't correct. I'm going to go for Paul McShane.
Paul McShane, yep, he was there. So Niall, you are left with the last answer.
Gary's still in, is he? Is Gary not still in?
No, Gary's out.
Gary's out.
Yeah, Gary's out. It's Niall.
If I were in, I'd say Mark Lynch.
Are you still there, Niall?
He's Googling. He's on Google.
Sorry, I'm here. Sorry. Talking. I've been sitting talking, but I had my mic on mute.
right. Cheers for your undivided attention, as ever.
I honestly honestly don't have a clue, if I'm being honest, but I'm going to go... I'm going to go with Ian Hart.
Ian Hart. You know what? You're good at this game. That he was on the bench.
Was it?
So you get one more goal.
God's sake! Who else? I'm not gonna
give you a clue because I knew this would be the last name on this team sheet in this game.
Unless, right? You know what it is? I'm going to take a shot of the dark. I've got two names, but I'm pretty sure neither of them would have played that game. But I did this last week and I got it, and everybody took the mic. So I'm gonna go for it this week. Was it Greg Halford?
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go. Right? You've done it. You've done it, and it's one point each for Niall and Mark.
Because I knew he was injured, right? But I was gonna say Richardson, but I just couldn't think of another player who would have been playing at full, because it was a fullback. Well, wait, I just couldn't think.
Where was Barnsley? Where was Barnsley at that time?
I think Barnsley came in that January.
January. Yeah.
Okay. I think Richardson signed. I don't think Richardson was there that season, was he?
He signed at the start of that season. That summer. Well, that was the first year of my season ticket that year. And like I say, can I quickly tell me funny story?
Aye, go on.
All right, so that game, obviously I used to sit next to my brother for all the games, or season ticket holders together. And when Anthony Stokes scored, I actually ran on the pitch. And there's actually, if you watch that goal where Stokes scores, where it's like a weird kind of over the head kick thing from a yard out, you could actually see me just, like, you wouldn't be able to recognise, it's like, but I know what I was wearing, run on the pitch and actually run on with the players. And I'm celebrating in the monks of the players for that goal. So that's how I knew that Whitehead was playing, because I remember seeing D Whitehead right in front of us and being a bit starstruck as he was celebrating the goal.
So no football ban in order for you then for encroaching on the pitch then?
Well, I haven't had one, but I might get one now.
No, not yet.
They know how to find you now.
Not, What was we had the Stuart let us on. Because we all started, because we used to run down, because I was row five, we used to run down. And the steward opened the little, like, ribbon thing and let us on, so we just ran on.
So, you can't complain then, can they? Right, no, so well done on that, lads. I thought that was quite difficult. I thought Greg Halford was a great answer there. No, that's some good knowledge, but good knowledge all round, apart from Barry, obviously, because you got knocked out, mate.
Darren Ward was the best one there. Darren Ward was the best answer there. Like,
I think we almost got the entire squad as well because he got all of the subs. I mean, someone mentioned Craig Gordon. He was the other sub. It wasn't mentioned. So well done, lads. Anyway, so we're going to bring the pod to an end now. But before we go, we've got some branch updates and a bit of a special announcement. So the branch updates, Thames Valley Mackhams, our friends there, have got their Christmas drinks on the 18th of December at the Greyfriars in Reading. And you can get all the information about that on Twitter at TV Mackhams. Our friends in the North American Supporters Association, they have Ontario meetups in Canada planned for Kitchener-Waterloo in December, Burlington in January, Kingston in January. And they also have a meetup in Charlotte, North Carolina. I think that's how you pronounce it. For the Gillingham Game 2. You can check out their Facebook and their Twitter. Their Twitter is at SAFC_NASA, NASA. As you will have heard earlier, the Sydney supporters group have their Christmas meetup in Sydney Park, which I'm sure will be lovely on the 1st of December, this coming weekend. And Louise give you all the ways to get in touch with them. And we have a special announcement as well that the Roker Report and the other fanzines and fan media outfits out there, A Love Supreme, Wise Men Say, and the SAFC Fans TV group are all getting together for a special recording this weekend. And thereafter, your questions and talking points. So if you can get in touch with any of the fan media organizations through the various social media channels, they'd welcome your questions, your talking points for that special recording they've got coming up. Thanks for listening and thanks for your time, Gary and Martin and Niall. Good to talk to you.
Cheers, lads.
All right.
Cheers, lads.
Speak to you soon.
Cheers.
See you. Ta-ra.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.